Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston, from New York to L.A., there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say,
and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is KELB 100.5 FM. And ladies and gentlemen, our studios are located here at Heritage Square, 113 Williamsburg Street in Lake Charles, Louisiana. And ladies and gentlemen, we have an affiliated station, KEBL 105.5 FM. And they're located at Parkview Baptist Church, 1623 Picard Road in Sulphur, Louisiana. And ladies and gentlemen, you can also go to KELBRadio.com. Once there on the search engine, there's an old-fashioned radio. You'll be able to listen to the radio if you click on it, with your computer, your laptop, your tablet, or your smartphone. And especially if you're out of the listening area, traveling in the country or out of the country even, ladies and gentlemen, if you have access to the Internet, you can get on and listen to the radio station. And also, if you go down to the left a little bit on that web page, you can also click on that old-fashioned TV, ladies and gentlemen, and you'll be able to view Brother Nathan Curtis, his co-host and guest here on Church and State. And it's another great way of viewing and listening to the program. And ladies and gentlemen, the views and or opinions expressed or implied on this station are not necessarily those of the owner, management, or employees of KELB 100.5. Or its affiliated station, KEBL 105.5. And we're going to start our second segment of Church and State.
It's time now for our second segment of Church and State with your host, Nathan Curtis, and his special guest representing the affairs of the state.
And some Brother Nathan, you're now on the air, sir.
We are on the air. Folks, you're listening to Church and State here at KELB. We have in the studio with us Captain Clay Higgins. He's also known as the Cajun John Wayne. Is that right?
I have been called that, yes, sir, although I'm not Cajun.
If you could
that's
be
just
here,
a tag that I honorably carry, of course, because it was given to me by Patriot Americans. And I am a cowboy, but there's no French in me. I'm not Cajun. I've lived in St. Landry Parish since 2002, and Acadiana is my home, South Louisiana. I'm born and raised. All my life, I'm 55 years old, but I'm actually an Irish boy from New Orleans.
Are you? Well, yes. I'll have to say hooray for the Irish then. You eat Irish stew?
Yeah, you know, of course. That's a poor man's meal.
Well, I think I have a heritage that's very much Irish. Scotch Irish is best I know. But we all need to learn how to fit in anywhere we are, get along. Not necessarily go along, but get along.
Right. I concur.
I remember, get along comes from a little song, get along, little doggy, get along, get along.
Right.
You look to be in excellent physical condition, Captain Higgins.
I am. I've been blessed with good health. My life, I've I've never smoked, and I've always been athletic and involved in things that are very demanding to the body. Of course, I've been a street cop for 13 years and a SWAT cop for that entire time. So that requires a great deal of discipline and physical training, and sometimes it's very grueling, but I managed to do it.
We shouldn't have any fat cops, should we?
Well, you know, the body is the temple, is it not? And I believe that we should do our best as individuals. Of course, we all have different natural shapes that the Lord has blessed us with, and we're all beautiful spirits in one way or another. But I do believe that health is part of well-being, and well-being is a testament to your belief that your body is a temple of God. So I do my best to take care of my temple.
When you first said the word temple, that struck a chord with me. I've had reason to emphasize that in my life with a little testimony. I was diagnosed with lung cancer December 21st last year, and I believe it's gone. I don't have it anymore. However, my oncologist had told me I had 12 to 18 months to live at the most. If I would follow his prescription, his medicine, he named it, I said, what will happen to me? You'll have to experience extreme fatigue for a while. After that, a lot of diarrhea. I thank God that none of that has happened to me yet, because my wife and I had a little family conference with the kids, and we agreed that we would trust the great physician.
Mm-hmm.
And that we would personally accept the responsibility to care for this temple, our body, which is called the temple of the Holy Spirit. You're
yes,
aware
sir.
Of that, apparently.
Yes, sir.
And we should not put anything in the temple of belongs to God to defile it. But we do that. Many of us do that all the time.
Right. We do that consistently, including with our spirit. And Paul told us in Corinthians to place your faith not in the wisdom of man, but in the spirit and the power of God. And that's a lesson it took me many, many years to learn.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 55 years old, and you know, I'm not ashamed to say that I've gradually become a decent man that I feel that I am now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, brother, I'm a highly decorated street cop and a lowly decorated Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my goal in the remaining years I have on this earth to try and balance that out, you know.
Well, I'm glad to hear those words. I think that we as voters should take into account, it shouldn't be our only criteria, but we certainly should take into account the spiritual life. First of all, to see if a candidate does have a spiritual life. Because if he doesn't have a spiritual life, he's relying entirely on himself and on man, isn't he?
Mm, yes, and that's a poor choice for any of us. We,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're completely inadequate to perform according to our very best standards,
mm-hmm.
unless we embrace the spirit within us and the gracious love of our Savior,
mm-hmm.
that will uplift us and guide us if we'll just seek that voice within us,
right.
and stay upon His path. And this is where I have failed miserably as a man through the course of my life, and where I've gradually, you know, learned to very carefully seek that guidance. So, you know, I'm a simple, humble man, brother, and I begin each day from bended knee, knowing that I'm an imperfect man driven by perfect intent to serve my God, my country, and my family. And
mm-hmm.
and yet I know every night I lay my head knowing that in some way I failed, but tomorrow begins another day.
Right.
Just a beautiful, joyous opportunity again to rise from bended knee, an imperfect man driven by that perfect intent. So this is how we live. This is the story of a man, and it's certainly I'm no exception.
Well, I certainly have to agree with you, and I have been there very imperfect in many ways in my life, and yet God has seen fit to put up with me and to
yeah.
use me and to change me and put me in a ways where I can better serve him.
Well, you're certainly doing that through your ministry here, that through the radio. You reach the hearts and souls of so many Americans that need it at that moment, and God puts you in their car or in their home or in their ear in some way. So thank you, brother, for what you do.
Well, I feel like I need to clarify, I am not an ordained minister. I don't carry the title pastor, but I feel privileged to do what I'm doing here. I've had great help from Brother Barry McCall, who founded this station. I met him and interviewed him several years before he founded this station.
Mm-hmm.
And I am a volunteer. I'm not on the payroll. But I consider it a privilege that I can do this. We've been doing this particular program. I've done others for the last 6 years. I'm just thankful to still be here.
You may not be on a payroll, but you're building your reward for sure.
Well, there are many things that are more rewarding than money.
Mm.
What does the Bible say? Having food and raiment, therewith be content.
Mm.
Be content. That doesn't mean that we can't strive to achieve and do. And I think the Bible also says that a man who will not provide for those of his own, the needs of his family, and I believe that means providing spiritually as well as for physical needs, as worse, the old King James says, as worse than an infidel or an unbeliever. So we can't pat ourselves on the back if we got everything on a silver platter and we're trying to hand it off to our children that way.
Right.
They need to be taught. They need to learn. Well, we're so glad that you're here this morning. Captain Clay Higgins, tell us a little about, your early life and your upbringing, if you will.
If I may, sir, I'm humbled that you would ask me that. I'm the seventh of eight children. I was born to my sainted mother in 1961. And growing up, my father and my mother were just wonderful, hard-working Americans. My father was a naval aviator in World War II. He and my mother were dating when war was declared. My father was of Irish heritage, as was my mother, and that the Higgins family heritage is 200 years deep out of New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
200 years ago.
Higgins boats, perhaps?
He was an actual English heritage Higgins. My ancestral forefather landed a boat 200 years ago in New Orleans, a cargo ship converted to carry human beings. He had been born into indentured servitude in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And he arrived in the port of New Orleans some 200 years ago with nothing but the shirt on his back and a dream in his heart to build a better day. And part of that, as he embraced his love and his dream of what America would be for he and his family to come, he changed his name, as many immigrants did. As you know and your listeners know from historical teachings, which well documented, that the Irish at that time were horribly prejudiced against them.
Mm-hmm.
And my ancestral forefather's name was O'Hagan.
O'Hagan?
O'Hagan, which means a Viking. And he changed that. He changed it to Higgins, which is an English surname, and in order to more easily assimilate and be able to get jobs and et cetera.
Let me ask you this question. I bet you've never been asked it before. You said when the Irish came here, they were discriminated against. Was it because of their skin color?
No, sir. The Irish were considered, as my ancestral forefather was born into indentured servitude. That means he could really never own land. He was a form of a slave, and the Irish were considered a servitile.
Servant class, yes.
It was considered a servant class, a servitile class, and to because of physical characteristics and and commonly red hair, and et cetera.
Oh, yes.
You know, Irish were identified, and of course, like most communities at that time, is you know, all the Sicilians and Italians and the Irish pretty much stayed within the same neighborhoods and lived and worked and worshipped amongst each other. So, you know, prejudice is something that discrimination is something that's part of the world's history,
mm-hmm.
and all of us have in some degree or another. We've overcome that and been involved in that on both sides of it by our lives and by our heritage, by the heritage of our family. So mine was no exception. But my father was born many generations later in 1922, and he married my mother after he got his wings. He went and joined the Navy when World War II began, as many millions of Americans did. And you know, after the war, my father was blessed to survive. He was one of 153 men from his area in Orleans Parish that went away initially from that neighborhood. Only four returned from World War II.
The rest died,
were killed in action or missing in action or lost, but...
Mm-hmm.
My father began building his family, and he was an intelligent man. My father was a man amongst men, and he had a degree in engineering. He was a mechanical engineer, and he built a business and thrived and was, you know, me and my mother had many children, and I'm the seventh of eight, and that began my life in 1961.
Well, took note of that number seven out of eight. I was number five out of five. But aren't you glad that your parents apparently did not believe in abortion?
Well, they certainly did not. I'm of Catholic heritage, and I was born and raised Catholic, and I'm certainly completely pro-life. I'm 110% pro-life,
mm-hmm.
and as were my parents, mm-hmm. of course. And
mm-hmm.
and as I grew, when I was a young man, in the '60s, my father moved us to the country. He for the first time in 200 years of Higgins history, we left New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
My father didn't like the way sort of society was moving. And he wanted his children to grow up in the country. And so he bought some land in St. Tammany Parish and built a big barn. And we raised and trained horses. That's how I grew up, raising and training horses.
How many acres did he buy?
42 acres.
So that was enough to raise and run the horses.
That's right. That's right. 42 acres. And I had a wonderful childhood. The very hard work we had at any given time, 50 to 150 horses. And
wow.
I didn't even know that there were children that got up after the sun came up. And for many years, I just presumed that everybody got up before the sun came up, you know.
And rode a horse, huh?
Well, we had to feed them and water them, and the stalls had to be cleaned, and horses need to be cared for. And that was our business, you know. So we were very serious about it, and we were a hard-working family. And it was a wonderful childhood. I'm so blessed by the lessons that were taught to me back then by my father and my mother and my life. Many of those lessons I'm still learning. They were mm-hmm. taught then, but it's the nature of a man. You know, we're stubborn, and we're resistant to the goodness that's shed upon us and the wisdom that's yeah. given to us by our elders, especially when we're young. We're resistant to that wisdom. It gets in there, though. That seed is planted in fertile soil,
mm-hmm.
and it gradually grows within us if we follow God's path, you know, even right. way down the line in life. Those seeds are nourished and grow, and we have the opportunity to become better men and women.
That sounds wonderful. And were you training horses for the racetrack or... For riding purposes?
For riding purposes, yes, sir. We trained hunters and jumpers.
Mm-hmm.
My family had many, many, many state championships in the 70s, of which I had a good handful myself. I have probably five or six state championships as a child. This was in the 70s,
Did you ever go to rodeos? Did you?
I did rodeo when I was older, though. I was one of those kids that always played Army and cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up doing both of my life. I served my country in the United States Army as an adult. I served honorably as a military police officer. When I got out the Army, I was an E6, a staff sergeant.
That's a good, very good achievement. And where did you serve?
My initial training was at Fort McClellan in Anniston, Alabama.
Uh-huh.
That's where I went through my training as a military police officer. And gradually, you know, during my active duty times, those years I served in Fort Polk and in Camp Beauregard here in Louisiana, and then
mm-hmm.
in Fort Colby, Panama, down in Central America, and various places. But listen, I never claimed to have been a big military hero or anything. I was highly decorated, but my service pales in comparison to the soldiers that are listening to you and the former soldiers. That I would certainly bow my head to any of my fellow service members that served honorably. I'm humbled by the level of service that my brothers and sisters perform right now across the country and across the world. And I did my little bit. I did my humble part, and I did serve honorably. But
did you say your dad was a naval pilot?
He was a naval aviator in World War II, yes, sir.
Where did he serve?
He served in both theaters. He served in the, well, not the European theater, but he served in the Atlantic. He flew essentially torpedo patrol for, you know, there were so many thousands of boats sank in the Atlantic that by German U-boats, and
mm-hmm.
he did that, and then he served in the Pacific off of the USS Ticonderoga.
And what area of the Pacific?
I'm not exactly sure where his tours were. My father didn't talk much about that.
But the Pacific's a big place, isn't it?
It's a big place. The Pacific is, you know, one-third of the world. So we always enjoyed listening to my father reminisce about his time in the service. But he always did so with this beautiful sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And that I really found a wonderful characteristic about my dad. He would frequently say he was a losing proposition for the Navy because he crashed more planes than he shot down. And I thought that was just a wonderful, you know, humble statement about his service. And, of course, there's many dots to be connected there and to read between the lines. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, my father was certainly part of the greatest generation, and I hope to be a humble shadow of what he achieved as a man.
Well, I've been fascinated with your story, and that's not the rest of the story. How did you become a police officer, and how did you become work for the sheriff's department?
Partner, as a young man, I went to college at LSU in 1979,
mm-hmm.
and I worked my way through college as a carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, as a senior at LSU, my young wife, who was from Venezuela, she was a beautiful, wonderful person that when we met, we fell in love at first sight. And she didn't speak English, and I didn't speak Spanish. We learned each other's language quickly, though, because we wanted to communicate, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
And when my young wife, her father had been killed in a tragic accident in Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
And her mother, her widowed mother, and her little sister fell on very hard times in Venezuela. So it was, to me, it was just a natural move. I said, bring them here. Let's get them to America. And they came in legally, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And they lived with us. So I dropped out of school as a senior in order to work full time and support my little family. And to me, that was the right decision to do. And if I had it to do all over again, I'd do the same thing. But this is why I have basically a complete college career in education, but no degree, because I dropped out to take care of my family.
And having served in the military police, did that directly lead you into police work when you...
Yes, sir. My Army service came after my college years. I got into business. Brother, I was a driven young man. I was a very hard worker. And you know, I had skills, and I pursued money.
Mm-hmm.
And this began the change of my life. I went into business, and I did very well. I began earning more and more money every year. And I didn't realize that as I was earning more and more money every year, the pursuit of that money. You know, the Bible's frequently misquoted. People say all the time that the Bible says money is a root of all evil. That's not what the Bible says. The Bible says the lust for money or the greed for money is the pursuit of all is the root of all evil. And I was no exception to that, my friend. I didn't realize it as the years passed, but as I gained money, I was losing my soul.
Mm-hmm.
And during the course of those years, my wife and I, we had a child, a beautiful daughter named Daniela, and Daniela died. She died as a very young child, and this was very, very difficult on my wife and I. It basically sort of destroyed us from within. I didn't have the strength inside of me to be the man that I needed to be at that time. I needed to be strong enough for myself and my wife. And this was a great failure in my life because I was not.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife and I ended up separated, and we were no longer together. And very soon after, my daughter died. And then my wife was killed in a car crash.
Mm.
So from the remnants of my life at that time, I became more ruthless in the pursuit of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I was blessed with the second wife who bore my living children. I have three grown children, living children. They're all in their 20s and doing very well, and I love them deeply. And my second wife was, you know, the mother of those children, and she was a wonderful woman, but I was a terrible husband. The world thought I was a good man, my friend, because, you know, we maintained the presence of goodness.
Mm-hmm.
I attended Mass on Sunday, and I, you know, we lived in a nice, beautiful home, and we drove fancy cars, and we ate at expensive restaurants. We had the trappings of success.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew gradually in my heart, my spirit made it very clear, the God's spirit within me was very uncomfortable with the life that I was leading. I did not honor my wedding vows. I was an adulterer, which meant I was a liar, because it's impossible to be an adulterer without being a liar. I worked too much. I drank too much. I didn't spend the kind of time I needed to with my children. I wasn't the kind of father I should have been. I certainly wasn't the husband I should have been. And all of this equates to I definitely was not the Christian I was called upon to be. So, brother, I lost my wife after many years of marriage. My wife divorced me, and rightfully so. Rightfully so, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And that really began the change within me, that my body could not continue with my spirit would not live. I was completely dying as a spiritual man. And I began to realize that I needed to change my life. So in 2004... the nature of my business moved me around the country. And in 2002, I'd moved to St. Landry Parish to run a large business there. And it was there, for the first time in my adult life, I felt like I was at home. There was something about just being back in South Louisiana. I had been living in Texas. And the people of South Louisiana, the spirit just embraced mine, and I decided in 2004, when I completed that job, that it was time for me to make a drastic change. And this is when I became a street cop.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your life with us. I think there are many lessons you've learned, or lessons that maybe others can benefit from. Time for us to take a break, a little bit past time, but I wanted to hear, as Paul Harvey would say, we talked about him earlier, the rest of the story. Stay tuned, folks. We're going to be right back with our special guest, and that is Captain Carl, is that right, Higgins, running for Congress.
Clay Higgins.
And that would be for the House, that would be...
Yes, sir. It's for United States Congress, for Charles Bustani's seat.
Right.
Yes, sir.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report. Mrs. Schlafly is a constitutional attorney, pro-family leader, and author of 25 books, including the best-selling A Choice, Not an Echo. And now, here's Mrs. Schlafly.
The Republican and Democratic parties adopted new platforms in their convention to July, and they present two fundamentally different plans for America's future. Never before in our lifetimes have the two platforms been so different. With the vacancy of conservative Justice Antonin Scalia hanging in the balance this November, the Democrat platform quickly named their top priority. They promised to appoint judges who will protect the abortion industry, not just on the Supreme Court, but all across federal benches. The Republican platform instead attacks the national crisis in our judiciary due to activism by federal judges. Only a Republican president will appoint judges who respect the rule of law expressed within the Constitution and Declaration of Independence, including the inalienable right to life and the laws of nature and nature's God, the GOP platform explains. The GOP platform calls for rebuilding the U.S. military into the strongest on earth, with vast superiority over any other nation or group of nations. The Democrats' platform does not mention military superiority or even American exceptionalism, but instead blames Americans for a recent uptick in Islamophobia. More than a quarter of the Republican platform is devoted to a section called America Resurgent, which sets forth the necessary steps to restore peace through strength while listening to the wisdom of President George Washington's warning to avoid foreign entanglements and unnecessary alliances. The Democratic platform calls for tangling the United States in a global network of alliances. The sharp contrast between these two platforms leaves no doubt about which party should receive your vote in November.
You know the issues in the 2016 presidential election campaign: illegal immigration, terrorism, globalism, a strong military, religious freedom, and who will be appointed to the Supreme Court. But you're only hearing spin and sound bites from the national media. Want a better understanding of what's at stake? Go to eagleforum.org for a complete collection of commentaries that makes the issues crystal clear. That's eagleforum.org. Thanks for listening, and join us again for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
And this is KELB. May I help you? Okay, Jason, hold on 1 second, and I'll have you on the air. This is KELB 100.5 FM, along with our affiliated station, KEBL 105.5 FM. And ladies and gentlemen, you can always go to KELBRadio.com. And Brother Nathan, I have a caller on the air for you, sir. I'm going to put him through. And
let me...
Is he on speaker?
Yes, sir.
Oh, hello?
Yes, sir.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I happen to be the host, but you want to speak to our guest this morning, I believe. But tell us, first of all, where are you calling from?
I'm all the way from Phoenix, Arizona.
How did you happen to hear about this show?
TuneIn app.
Internet?
Yep.
All right. Have you called before? Have you and I talked before?
Yes, we have.
Okay. Well, then I know you, but you had a question. And you wanted to ask, did you want to ask our guest a question?
Oh, sure, yeah.
All right, he's right here.
Yes, sir, I can hear you. My ears are getting old on me, but I can hear you all right now.
Well, I just wanted to thank you for your service, and, you know, I think that's awesome that you serve in the Army, and I was just wondering, what steps are you going to take to defend traditional marriage?
What was your question, sir, the last part?
What steps will you take to defend traditional marriage?
What steps would you take to defend traditional marriage?
Marriage is clearly defined. I believe in the biblical definition of marriage. That's between one man and one woman. Now, that's what's in my heart, and that's what I believe to be true. That's the biblical truth. Now, I do believe that love cannot be statutorily defined. I don't think that it's possible for... You know, Paul told us in Corinthians, sir, to place your faith not in the wisdom of man, but in the spirit and power of God. And I believe that. And if you could look at a statute, a written statute, as the wisdom of man, it would be to statutorily define love would be placing your faith in the wisdom of man rather than in the spirit and power of God. Me personally, I believe in the biblical definition of marriage. I believe that to be true. But I want to say, in the interest to be completely transparent and honest, which is my nature, I don't believe love can be statutorily defined. However, I do certainly, as a constitutionalist, I'm a conservative constitutionalist, I believe that states have the rights to define marriage according to the will of the people. So, I defend the state's rights to define marriage by the will of the people. And anywhere that has been presented to the people, the Spirit has spoken amongst the voters, and marriage has been clearly defined as between a man and a woman. Where we have problems in our nation today, stepping away from that legally, is from activist judges operating on the bench as legislators and overriding the constitutional authorities of the sovereign states, which have defined marriage as statutorily reflective of the biblical definition of marriage, which is what I personally believe. So it's a complex question you asked. The federal government,
right,
you know, as a federal, serving my country in the United States Congress in the House of Representatives, which is what I intend to do. That's the path that's been prepared for me. That's what I'm embracing.
Now,
so working as a congressman out of D.C., you know, one of my efforts will be to remove the federal government from the sovereign rights of the states. The federal government is too involved in our life. It's too massive. It's become a leviathan of biblical proportions. It needs to be scaled way back and get out of our way as Americans. So I'm a states' rights guy when it comes to the definition of marriage.
Let me ask a question as a follow-up. Are you opposed to the ruling that the Supreme Court made saying that same-sex marriage was okay?
Yes, I believe that's reflective of activist judicial involvement. I don't believe that the United States Supreme Court has any business overriding a state's sovereign right to define marriage according to the will of its people. Listen, this is a complex issue, and the difference between, this is what many Americans don't understand. It's been a long time since, I would say decades, for decades now, it's been perfectly legal for a woman to go have a marriage ceremony with a woman or a man with a man. They could throw themselves a completely gala wedding. They could spend $100,000 on a wedding. Nobody would stop that. There's not a state in the country would stop that. The question comes whether or not their state would recognize that union as a marriage, a legal marriage, and therefore fall within the parameters of the rights and services provided by the state to a legal wedding. This is where states' rights differentiate themselves from the right of a free American to pursue happiness. And this is where This is what I mean when I say that love can't be statutorily defined. I respect, although I don't agree with it, you understand? I respect my fellow Americans' right to have a wedding ceremony. They marry who they like. But don't ask me to recognize it legally if I don't choose to. And within each sovereign state should have the right to put that vote before the people. And everywhere that has happened, it's been backed up as a biblical definition. The federal government and the United States Supreme Court should stay out of this.
And you would probably also say that a pastor, a minister of the gospel, should not be forced to officiate at such a same-sex wedding if it's against their conscience.
That's a horrific request. It's completely outside of constitutional parameters, not to mention biblical parameters. There's no American should be forced to provide a service outside of the parameters of his heartfelt belief and his spiritual understanding of what's right and wrong. Not a minister or a man of the cloth. A photographer should not have to provide his professional services at a wedding if he chooses not to. At what point do we get in our nation where we're forcing Americans to perform professional acts that they believe in their heart is contrary to their religious righteousness? This is where we're out of control as a country, and we need to return reasonable voices within the halls of power in D.C. I'm one of those.
And Jason, may I ask another question of our guest?
Oh, yes.
The other question I want to ask is about this LGBTQ now bathroom use. Is it right for the president to want to force the states all around the country to let people into a bathroom regardless of their actual gender simply because they feel today or whenever that they should belong to a different gender than that which they're born with?
Are you asking me, brother?
Yes, sir.
That's going to be a short conversation, man. Yeah. It's just ridiculous, man, that we're even having this conversation in America. It don't make no sense. Man, we have serious problems in our country. We face a $20 trillion debt. That's almost insurmountable. Our cities are on fire. Policemen are shot in their cars and on the street in the back. Our southern border is overrun. We're being invaded without a shot fired. We're completely out of control regarding our priorities as a nation. A lot of that's coming out, I'm sorry to say. I have a great deal of respect for the office of the presidency, and although I didn't vote for President Obama, I'm telling you right now, I'd take 15 bullets for him today because he's my president. You understand? But that being said, it's certainly almost a diversion of our attentions so that we're not paying attention as a... We're an American citizenry that's run by ridiculous media input, and it's controlled in many ways, designed to divide us, whereby we may be controlled. How on earth are we having a conversation in America right now, in a very important, crucial election year, at a time when we face almost insurmountable challenges before us? How have we been forced into having a conversation about bathrooms? It's just ludicrous, man. A man should go in a man's bathroom and a woman in a woman's bathroom. That's the end of that story.
Right. Brother Jason, do you have any other questions to ask of our guest?
No, but I thank you so much for your comments and for doing everything that you do to uphold the Constitution. That really means a lot.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate you calling. Did you say you called in from California?
No.
Phoenix.
Phoenix, Arizona.
From Phoenix. What's the temperature in Phoenix right now?
The temperature right now, let's see. It is, I'm getting it right now. I don't know, but the high is 101 today and the low is 83.
So you're up into the hundreds, right? Yeah, Phoenix. I have friends in Phoenix, man, and And I hear so many. I've been to Phoenix one time. Beautiful part of our country. I stayed in a lovely hotel. I love the people there and the culture. I thank you so much for calling in today. And God bless you, sir, for your support and your love and prayer. I very much appreciate it.
Oh, you too. You too. And, you know, and it means a lot because there's a lot of guys out there who used to live homosexual lifestyles and now they don't, you know.
Right. Listen, if I may, I have one more thing to say about that. Because I believe in complete transparency. I am not a politician, brother. I'm a patriot. I'm on a patriot's call to duty to pursue this office for the United States Congress. And I believe that we should be completely transparent. So we don't always have to agree on everything. I've found in my life that Americans don't expect to agree 100% of the time with the men and women they send into the halls of power. We just seek truth. We want the American that's seeking office and seeking a representative to speak what's in their heart. So I'm not fearful about that. So let me say one more thing before we move on about gay marriage. I have one very good friend that's gay. I didn't know he was gay for many, many years in our life. He's a black belt. I'm a martial artist myself. I have my own school. We were trained together, and he was a lieutenant in the Navy. I had no idea that he was gay because he was private about his intimate life. You understand? And I didn't pry because that's just not the thing that we talked about. But I discovered many years later that he was gay. And to this day, this man is my dear friend. We correspond regularly. He lives in Las Vegas. He's a very successful man. So I can tell you that if my friend that lives in Vegas, that lives a gay lifestyle, if he's a conservative Republican, by the way, if he got married and sent me an invitation, I would go. I would go to my friend's wedding. You understand? So I don't want to. I'm not the kind of American that changes my tone according to who I'm addressing. When I speak to a congregation at a church, and then speak to a group of college students, I'm not speaking a different story. When I open my mouth, I'm speaking my heart. So I didn't want to pass this question about gay marriage without being completely transparent with your listeners and your viewers, sir, about where I am with that.
Brother Jason, thank you so much for your call. Please call us again, okay?
All right.
Thank you so much. God bless you. Now, I've spoken with Jason. He's called me at home.
Really?
Cell phone number. Past midnight, I think, at maybe 2 o'clock, we've talked for 30 minutes or close to an hour.
Wow.
And I'm glad that he called. Oh, you were telling us about your transition.
From a businessman to a street cop?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Listen, that came at a time.
We got four minutes.
That came at a time. That's good. When I left, I made a decision to leave my career. I'd earned about $140,000 that year. It was in 2004, and I took a job as a street cop working for $8 an hour. It's like taking a vow of poverty. Mm-hmm. And brother, man, I tell you, it was the best thing I've ever done in my life. It was from those few years of very, very difficult financial struggle, and I had my lights turned off and had eviction notices, and I learned to live very small, very humble, and I learned what it was to pawn a precious item in order to pay rent, and to shop at Walmart and a dollar store, you understand, very carefully, to eat very simple foods. And this was a time in my life of cleansing, and a very wondrous thing began to happen. My home, my humble little home, became filled with love and laughter. I got very close with my children. I got back into the Word. I began investing myself in the Bible every day. and the words were speaking to me. And by 2007, I perhaps was blessed enough that my current wife, Miss Becca, was brought into my life. And we met in 2007. We were married in 2009. And the years just unfolded, and I became a very highly decorated street cop. You know, that was the transition. It was very important.
And 7 years in this marriage.
Yes, sir.
All right. We are out of time, but do you have a final word for us?
Yes, I do. I'm so humbled to have been here with you today. I always feel inadequate in the presence of beautiful Christians, and you know I'm a simple man, brother, and I'm a working class guy. The path that I'm on right now has been prepared for me, and I've embraced it, and I'm doing my best. The only promise I can make to your listeners is that as a congressman serving a third district, I'll begin each day from bended knee, and I'll take it from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we thank you so much for that, and of course, this election has about another 60 days to
yes,
run,
sir.
Roughly. It's coming down pretty fast.
Mm-hmm. We're doing well. We're looking for some sign locations in Calcasieu. We need about 50 addresses in Calcasieu.
We can squeeze in another question here. Are you supporting Donald Trump?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I went to the Republican National Convention. Mr. Trump was not my first choice amongst the field, but he's the representative that most clearly represents my own beliefs and stances regarding how we need to move our country forward. And the alternative is just abysmal.
You've been concluded that we cannot afford to have another 4 years, 8 years of Obama's regime.
No, our country would completely fall. We have to make courageous moves now. Mr. Trump, if you like him or not, he's a winner. America will start winning again if we put him in office.
Well, I'm getting an urgent note that we are out of time. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, sir. God bless you and your audience.
For the House in District...
District 3, right here, throughout Southwest Louisiana. And my website is CaptainHiggins.com, CaptainHiggins.com.
That's good enough. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank all of you for listening. And, God willing, we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Church and State.
Thank you for listening to Church and State on KELB 100.5 FM. It's our pleasure to present special guests to keep the Christian community up to date on what's happening in our local churches and on what's happening in our government. We urge every Christian listener to attend, to be active in, and to support a local church. We all need a church family. We also encourage you to be well-informed and an active citizen, communicating with your elected officials on a regular basis, not just at election time. Get to know your elected representatives personally and make sure they know you. Get involved the right way, the Christian way. If you have questions or comments about Church and State, you may call the host, Nathan Curtis, at 337-564-4754. Our mailing address is KELB, 1605 Broad Street, Lake Charles, Louisiana, 70601. Or visit us on the web at www.kelbradio.com.
Problems down through history.
With that, for a news, I'm Bob.